Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Chad Sharnow, who is the co-founder of Wicked Healthy and also of the new Wicked Healthy Cookbook. And he'll be on just a little bit, and we'll talk about his new book that's coming out this week. But before we do that, of course, I wanted to share with you some things in the news, share with you some events coming up, and, of course, this week's recipe. So I wanted to start off by talking about water in Flint, Michigan. I know it's been 4 years since that whole fiasco started, and yet there's still families in Flint, Michigan, that still don't have clean drinking water. And it's just ridiculous that this is still going on. And while this is going on, we have, you know, Scott Pruitt at the Environmental Protection Agency wanting to gut federal regulations that protect water supplies. Does that make sense? Of course not. And so we need everybody's help. Last week, the Water Affordability, Transparency, Equity, and Reliability Act, which stands for Water Act, was reintroduced into the Senate, and we're trying to help get that through. So if you see petitions, I have one on my website, to help bring awareness to the Water Act, please sign that petition and send those messages to your representative. It's really, really important. Last week, you know, I took that bus up to Albany to protest Governor Cuomo, you know, to try to raise his awareness to really walk the talk that he does. I mean, he talks the environmental talk very well, but not all of his actions really come through and speak to that. So we are asking Governor Cuomo to stop funding any fracking infrastructure in New York State. We're asking him also to make polluters that are eroding our soil and polluting our soil, make them accountable and hold them responsible for the cleanup, and also to push us to 100% renewable energy. And actually, the next day after that happened, after we were up in Albany, they did pass the Climate and Community Protection Act, which promotes 100% renewable energy by 2050. Now, 2050 is, you know, still many, many years off, and there's a lot of things we need to be doing much sooner than that. So we really need to be moving this whole situation forward, and we need everyone's help. I was recently talking with a colleague about, you know, using our power in really constructive ways, and I have seen from being in this food movement for so long, seeing that policies and getting these policies changed is really where we need to address a lot of our energy. And going to town hall meetings and asking the representatives and senators the correct questions, the questions about where they stand on renewables, where they stand on fracking, where they stand on GMOs, and getting that on public record is really crucial in holding them accountable to the things that they say to the public. So please, you know, keep watching my websites, and when you have opportunities to show up and support environmental protections, please, please do so. Let's see, lots of great things coming up this week. This weekend, if you happen to be in the Los Angeles, California area, is the 2018 United States of Women Summit. And this will bring together thousands of women to inspire and motivate and teach and learn. And attendees will connect with leading organizations to channel their energy into action. And so if you are in the LA area, that is something you certainly want to check out. Just Google the United States of Women Summit, and you'll get more information. By the way, I do also have all of this information that I'm saying on my website, so you can also check out my website at iegreen.com. This weekend is opening day at Orchestri Farm on Saturday, and that's from 10 to 2, and that's at the Planting Fields Arboretum. And Orchestri Farm is a special needs community supported agricultural farm, and it's working things a little different than most CSAs in that they're really trying to build community. So everyone that is getting vegetables from the farm actually is asked to work at the farm along with the autistic young adults that work there with their helpers. So it's building community, and it's really a beautiful program if you are in the Long Island area. This weekend is also Riverkeeper's annual Hudson Sweep on May 5th, and that takes place all along the Hudson River, all the way upstate, starting from the city. So go on to my website to find out, to get the link to Riverkeeper, or just go to riverkeeper.org and find out a space location near you where you can help clean up the riverside. Really a wonderful coming together of thousands of people. It's really a beautiful situation. So if you can make it, please do. Also on May 5th, there's the Square Foot Gardening Workshop, and that's being sponsored by the Peconic Land Trust, and it's out in Southold this weekend, and that's from 10 to 2, and it will teach you ways to grow 20% more vegetables in the same type of space by the square foot gardening method. So there will be a master gardener there, Reese Michaels, who will show you how to do that. So check that out. On May 8th, the New York City Food Policy at Hunter is having one of their breakfast summits, and this theme is how can tech help the food system. And those are start at 8:30. They offer a free breakfast. The whole event is free. You just have to sign up on their website. So if you go to the Hunter College New York City Food Policy Center, you can sign up there. Slow Food New York City is also having their spring soiree at God's Love We Deliver, and that's in the city on I'm actually not sure which street it's on, but it's down downtown, and 166 6th Avenue. I think it's around 12th Street. Anyway, they're honoring Michael Anthony, who is the executive chef at Gramercy Tavern and at the Whitney. He's a snail blazer honoree, really taking up the slow food principles and using those principles in his restaurants. So it's a fundraiser for Slow Food New York City, so if you can make it, please do. Also this weekend, just backtracking, on Sunday is the Spring Festival at the Walder School in Garden City. That's always a great family day. Maypole dancing, great food, lots of events going on there if you're interested. They usually have a nice craft fair there as well. May 19th to the 20th is the New York City Vegetarian Food Festival coming up. There's chef demos, speakers, kids' activities, fitness classes, really a fun day. That's Saturday and Sunday, May 19th and 20th at the Metropolitan Pavilion. Tickets are $20, really fun. This is a great workshop I want to share with you coming up at the New York City Botanical Gardens in the Bronx. It's a biomimicry workshop for social innovation. It's from June 14th to the 16th. It sounds amazing. It is a bit expensive. It's $1,000, but they do have scholarships. So if you're interested, biomimicry has been used so much to, you know, discover ways that nature is dealing with, water repellent and, just innovation ways or, in nature, it happens naturally, but there's things that we can use and learn from butterflies and bees that we can use on products and create really great ecosystems through this. So if you're interested in biomimicry, this will be a great workshop at the New York City Botanical Gardens. Change Food is having a meetup. Change Food is an organization being run by Diane Hatz, who was the founder of TEDx Manhattan, and she's now putting her energy into Change Food, and she's bringing people together around moving this food movement and just building community around food. And the theme of this one is going to be technology and how technology can help the food system and the food movement. So if you're interested, that will be taking place in Brooklyn. And again, you can find that information on my website. And that's it. Now I'd like to share my recipe with all of you before I invite Chad Sarnow on. This week I made chocolate donuts. These are vegan, and I also made a batch that were vegan and gluten-free. You know, my donuts are not fried. They're just baked, but they are really, really good. And, you know, I don't very often go for sweets, but people around me do, and somebody gave me a donut pan, and I had never used it, so I did this week. So anyway, this is a vegan, and it's also a vegan gluten-free option for all of you. The ingredients you need are 1 tablespoon ground flaxseed, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, and 1 tablespoon water. And those I mix together to create what I call a flax egg. And you mix those together in a separate bowl and just set those to the side. Then you need 3/4 cups of flour, whether you're using a gluten-free flour or I use an organic white flour. You could also use a whole wheat pastry flour. So the flour of your choice. So to make it gluten-free, I use Pamela's gluten-free flour. A quarter teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon baking powder, 1/4 cup of cacao powder, 1/4 teaspoon salt, 1/4 cup of organic shredded coconut unsweetened, 7 tablespoons maple syrup, 1/2 a cup of almond milk, 3 tablespoons coconut oil that I melted, and 1 teaspoon vanilla extract. And then I also made a glaze with 3/4 cup of organic powdered sugar and 2 tablespoons of warmed almond milk. I actually wanted to use it with maple syrup, but the color just didn't work right. So I used the powdered sugar. I also even put vanilla in it one time, and then the vanilla turned the glaze a little bit too dark, and I wanted the glaze to come out more white. So I left the vanilla out. And then I also toasted 1/2 a cup of shredded coconut in a cast iron pan with no oil, just till it started getting a little bit of golden, and I sprinkled those on top. So to make this recipe, as I said, you want to make the flax egg separately, putting the flax seeds, the apple cider vinegar, and the water in a little bowl, and just let that stand for 5 minutes on the side. And then in a larger bowl, you're going to mix the dry ingredients together, the flour, the baking soda, the baking powder, the cocoa, the salt, and the shredded coconut. And then in another bowl, you're going to mix the wet. You're going to mix the almond milk, the maple syrup, the coconut oil, and the vanilla extract. And then you're going to add the wet ingredients to the dry ingredients. Mix it all up, then add the flaxseed mixture and mix that in well. And then using either a pastry bag or a plastic bag where you cut off the corner, you're going to pipe the batter into a greased donut pan. And you bake it for just 10 minutes and let it cool completely before dipping it into the glaze and sprinkling the toasted coconut on top. And that's it. Like I said, it comes together really quick, very easy, and yet super, super delicious. And both of them were great. We did a taste test of the vegan ones and the gluten-free vegan ones next to each other, and they both were really great. So either option is good. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you, all of you, Chad Sarnow, who is the VP of he is the co-founder of Wicked Healthy and the VP of Culinary at Good Catch Foods. And I'll let him tell us more about Good Catch Foods in a little bit. Their mission is to create seafood without sacrifice by creating plant-based seafood line that will be launched later on this year. And Chad is formerly the Vice President of Plant-Based Education and Culinary Wellness at Ruxby, which is an cooking school. Prior to that, he spent several years as a Senior Culinary Educator, Global Healthy Coordinator, and Media Spokesman for the Whole Foods Market Healthy Eating Program, which is right now, as many of you know, I'm working with the Healthy Teachers Program, and that's affiliated with Whole Foods Market and came out of some of his healthy eating program. So I'll let him tell us more about that too. Chad was also the executive chef at SAF Restaurants, which launched the first international brand of vegan restaurants in Istanbul, Munich, and London. He's also the co-author alongside Chris Carr of the New York Times best-selling cookbook, Crazy Sexy Kitchen. And his latest cookbook, which is coming out this week, The Wicked Healthy Cookbook, which I actually happen to have a preliminary copy right here, which is just really great, called The Wicked Healthy Cookbook. and that's coming out this week. And so I'm really so thrilled to have you on, Chad, with me to talk about this beautiful book.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I don't know how I follow up chocolate donuts, but hopefully we'll it'll be
you
just
have
as
plenty to follow up with.
So.
You have plenty to follow up
delicious.
With in this book. It's just I can't tell you how much fun I've had just reading through this book. You know, the love and joy and excitement and passion that you bring to the pages is just palpable. It's just great. So I love the whole
I appreciate
approach.
That. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's definitely, as you know, I mean, just, you know, putting out any book is definitely a labor of love. That's a 2 or 3 year, 2.5, 3 years in the process with that book. And certainly all of our favorites in between the binders. So.
Uh-huh. It's just really great. And we'll talk about it more. But first, I'd like to just backtrack. And if you could share with us, how did you get into vegan cooking and your passion for cooking and plant-based cooking?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So I from a young age, I was, you know, I say blessed with asthma, but I was on multiple inhalers as I was growing up. And, you know, had grew up with an appreciation for food also. So there's no way that I could connect, you know, food with health. It just didn't make sense. So I just was going about my childhood, and, you know, I thought being on all these inhalers and breathing off a nebulizer on the weekends was kind of a normal thing when you had asthma as a kid. And I was just sick of it. As a friend of the family had mentioned, you know, maybe dairy contributes to asthma, and I was willing to do anything. So I jumped and eliminated dairy from my diet, and within 6 months, hadn't touched another inhaler, and my asthma completely dissolved, which is just completely blew me away at a young age. I was in my late teenage years, and so that kind of opened my eyes, and it was the first time I actually made that connection between the food we put in our body. You know, it gives us our, you know, the health comes that we live every day, and so that kind of made that connection, and kind of, you know, from there really catapulted my interest and my passion in sharing that, first and foremost, but also just digging in, you know, and trying to, you know, kind of navigate this whole field of, at that time, I just thought I was looking at healthy food, but it's certainly, you know, culinary wellness is, I think, the general term. And, you know, that connection to food and health was huge for me at that young age. So that's how I first got introduced to sort of healthier diet.
Now, you work with your brother as well, correct?
Yeah. So
did you both go to culinary school?
No, he went to culinary school for a little while. But no, I mean, I think probably the greatest teachings for us have been just in and out of different kitchens, working our way up through the kitchen. So he's older than me. We've, you know, we only started to really work together in the past, I'd say 8 years or so. You know, he was, he joined Whole Foods Market as the executive chef of Whole Foods, and I was leading their R&D efforts and education around the healthy eating program, as you mentioned. So that's really around that time, right around that time is when Wicked Healthy was, the whole concept of our business was born.
Fascinating. Yeah, I thought, from reading the book, I actually thought you went to culinary school, and I was wondering, you know, how much of culinary education is really being focused on plant-based, and I didn't think very much, so I'm probably correct in that.
I think it's growing. It's certainly growing, but I think the culinary education model is failing altogether. This is why you're seeing a lot of these larger culinary schools. I mean, they're closing their doors, a lot of them. You know, and it's just not a sustainable model. You're paying $100,000 to go to culinary school, and you're still getting out of school and having to, you know, work the line, a $10 job, you know, to kind of work your way up. So I think in general, I think that model is slipping, and the ones that are still thriving are schools that are focused on, you know, culinary innovation and keeping up with the trends, and certainly plant-based is you know, top on that list.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that, you know, in the food system, the organic food movement or the organic food line is the fastest growing segment of the food industry right now, without a doubt. And that's why so many corporations, big food people, want to get a piece of the action. And and we have to work so
it's
hard
amazing.
to keep the regulations clean for organic because there's so much pressure from these big conglomerates who want to, you know, weaken the standards and things like that. I'm sure you seen that.
Yeah, and on the other side of it, though, there's also in terms of plant-based, not necessarily just focused on organic, but in terms of this plant-based push, you know, these larger companies. I mean, if you look at some of the largest animal ag companies, and you know, Tyson and Hormel, and you know, Maybelline, they're taking a stance, and they're acquiring some of these, you know, plant-based well-known brands, and they're pushing all their R&D and innovation efforts towards plant-based, which is quite amazing. You know, they're seeing the future of protein, not only strictly animal sourced, but that's just, you know, the diversity of protein is what they're focused on, which is pretty exciting, you know. So
do you trust them?
I think I've been an activist my whole life in many ways, in many different sort of chapters of my life. And I think what I've realized over time is that the only way that we can make change is from within, within the system, to shake things up from within. And there's only so much that you can do from the outside, and I think we've all done incredible work to bring plant-based in general and the general awareness around food. You know, there's only so much we can shake from the outside, and so I think, you know, working from within the system is the way that, you know, real change can ripple out, in my opinion. So
yeah,
do I trust them is, I think, a bigger conversation, because I don't know, you know, I don't know them. You know, I don't know a lot of the intentions behind these companies, but, you know, a couple that I won't name, names that in that larger list that are, you know, animal ag-focused companies that are really driven by plant-based innovation now, I certainly see some of their intentions are in the right place. And, you know, I think it's exciting. I mean, I think that that's an argument that a lot of people in, you know, sort of the grassroots plant-based movement would argue. You know, but I think the only way that we're going to make change, and the only way that, you know, plant-based in general, plant-based proteins are going to become more mainstream, is getting these big players involved that really have that leverage to, you know, implement the change that we've been working towards so long, you know. So I think if a company is going to be acquired and they have really strict guidelines of ingredients and, you know, the sourcing of their products and sort of the ethos behind why their company was started, and sort of the new parent company is purchasing them based on those ethos, I think that's exciting, you know. And some of these companies that are being acquired, you know, Field Roast is one of them. Field Roast is a grain meat company. They do sausages and, you know, chow cheese and a bunch of really amazing vegan products.
Yeah, I know them.
Yeah, they were purchased by Maple Leaf, and which is one of the largest animal ag companies up in Canada, and they you know, David Lee, who is the, you know, the founder of Field Roast, had them, you know, sign off and understand the vegan ethos behind the company and why they started you know, Field Roast, and that was their stipulation with taking the next step with them, and they honor that, you know. And I sat with the leadership there, and just, it's just really exciting to hear the founder of one of these massive companies, you know, state right there that their focus is on plant-based innovation and diversifying their selection of protein, you know. So to me, that's very exciting. So
yeah, no, I agree that's very exciting. And if they sign off and hold to those ethos, that would be great. You know, I'm just thinking, so often what happens is you get customers that are that have consumer loyalty, you know, like when Silk first came out, you know, it was all organic, you know, and then when it was bought out by I'm not sure who, you know, it became unorganic. But of course, people didn't re-look at the label. They already thought they were buying something that was good, and then it was changed. So there's just, you know, often that kind of situation where, you know, Horizon was bought out. And, you know, what the people that originally start something very often who have those ethos and the morale behind it, and the principles behind it, you know, get bought out by a big company whose, you know, bottom line is their ethos, you know, and they're really just focused on making money. And, you know, that's why, you know, they want a piece of the action, but they don't necessarily understand the reasoning behind it. They just want a piece of the profit. So, you know, you just have to watch them. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that in the plant-based community in general, there are early adopters, and those early adopters, when it comes to consumers, are incredibly loud with their voice, and they can make or break a lot of these companies. And those, that brand loyalty, as you mentioned, from the consumer is what, you know, continues to help those companies grow, those plant-based companies. So I think the landscape is changing from when, you know, Silk made that jump to, you know, some of the plant-based protein companies that are doing it now. I think that they're, you know, these larger companies are adhering by their quality standards of those plant-based focused ones. And, you know, you're seeing it more and more of that shifting, because they are seeing that brand loyalty from the customers. So the importance
of having been involved in plant-based cooking for so long, how have you seen the landscape shift over the years?
I think it's an incredibly exciting time, I think, for if you just look at a couple different segments. If you look at healthcare, you look at culinary, you look at, you know, just consumer and retailers in general, I think the whole landscape of plant-based, there's so many examples of how that's shifting, and it's all shifting together, and the demand is, you know, needed. I mean, from healthcare, there's more and more physicians and healthcare professionals that are pushing a plant-based diet or even a high plant diet, you know, eating real foods at the end of the day, eating organic food. So there's that demand from the healthcare sector. And then there's also the demand from institutions, whereas, you know, colleges and universities, for example, of our youth these days are demanding healthier choices, you know. And so I think universities are listening. So then you're getting the SEDEXs, the Aramarks, the Compass groups of the world looking at the options and the innovation piece. And then you look at diners and consumers from a culinary perspective. You look at some of the top chefs, they're now offering, you know, vegan tasting menus, and it's no longer this fringe sort of hippie freak diet, you know. It's it's now considered just a, you know, I look at vegan food, and I think a lot of people in the culinary world look at it as just another option now, you know, that you should always have it on your menu. I think that chefs that don't embrace it are just way behind the bus. You know, the train's left, and there's if you're having companies like Kraft and Hormel and some of these massive companies pushing their R&D innovation towards plant-based, you know that there's a major tipping point. And I think we're at it right now. I mean, you look at and we could talk about this a little bit in the show, but you look at some of these large retailers. Some of the largest retailers in the world are putting their R&D efforts into lines of innovation around plant-based. One of the projects that we're working on is our company's Wicked Healthy, my brother and I, which our mission and sort of focus of our company is to train manufacturers, retailers, and food service professionals around plant-based innovation. So we do trainings, we do recipe development for these companies and launch lines of food. And one of our projects over in the UK is with Tesco. Tesco is the third largest retailer in the world, and they have partnered with Wicked Healthy, and we have launched a line of food called Wicked Kitchen, which is an exclusive line of food that we developed for Tesco. My brother is over there currently as the executive chef of the company, and we launched this line of food, and we launched 20 products, all grab-and-go, ready-made meals that are plant-based. And we launched in about 600 stores in January, and we're doing some line expansions as we speak. So you see these companies such as Tesco that are, you know, seeing this massive consumer demand, and it is to date, it's been the most successful private label launch they've ever had, you know, and it's exciting, you know. I mean, just seeing, you wouldn't be able to see that 10 years ago, you know, even, you know, you wouldn't see the Tysons of this world investing in, you know, in a plant-based protein company, you know, such as Beyond Meat that they just did. They just bought 10%, I believe, and, you know, you wouldn't see, you know, same thing with Maple Leaf and the acquisition of Light Life, which they do incredible tempeh and tofu products and also field roast. So there's, the landscape is changing very, very quickly, I think, and it's growing, I would say exponentially it's grown in the past 5 years. If you see just in general, I mean, the perfect example is non-dairy, the whole non-dairy segment. When I first stopped eating dairy and drinking milk at a young age due to, you know, health reasons, as I mentioned, there was soy milk and maybe you could find rice milk, you know, at a health food store, never at a regular store, right? Never at a more of a mainstream retailer. And now non-dairy milks have like 12% of the market share, which is insane. 12% of the market share of the milk category. And wow, that, you know, which is crazy, right? I mean, that just shows right there that people are opening their eyes from a health standpoint to an animal welfare standpoint, and consumers are demanding it, and companies are listening finally, which is really exciting. So,
It is exciting. I've also been, you know, doing this for over 30 years, and it is just, it's fascinating to see more and more options being offered, being able to shop pretty much at any store, like you were saying, for, you know, the non-dairy things, but even for organic vegetables, you know, you can find them in regular supermarkets. I mean, Walmart, you know, not that I'm promoting going to Walmart, but you know, everybody's getting a piece of it, and it is because of consumer demand, and just really exciting. So
it's crazy. Just on Walmart, Walmart's the largest seller of organic vegetables in the United States.
Are they really?
Isn't that insane? They're the largest seller of organic vegetables in the U.S.
That's
just a crazy statistic. That just shows you that, you know, middle America, it's not just in these progressive cities that people are demanding it, you know. So, anyways, I just heard that the other day, which is interesting.
You know, and then you get into the whole other side of, you know, are they paying their farmers well? I certainly hope
so. Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about your cookbook. When it's coming out this week?
Yeah, May 8th. It's super exciting. So a week from yesterday, it hits the shelves. So Wicked Healthy Cookbook. And, you know, the cool thing about this book is that it's not just a cookbook. I know every cookbook author says that. but this truly is. I mean, you have a copy of it there. We have, you know, the first third of the book is really breaking it down to flavor development and, you know, the importance of, you know, considering texture and flavor development and working with aromatics and working with base recipes and really talking about foundational culinary technique. And then we get into the recipes. So that with that alone, I think that this is sort of a timeless book of some real standards and technique that we focused on, that we've been focusing on for years. That's in the beginning of the book. So we're excited about it. We're excited to get it out there.
You want to share with us, you know, one of your favorite techniques that you share in your book that you think really is a changer in the way the food comes out?
Yeah. I would say that my brother's been a mushroom head for a long time, and he loves mushrooms, and so he's brought to the table, and what we've been doing is the mushroom pressing method, which we call it in the book, and it's something that we started to do years back, and it's basically taking mushrooms and pressing them between cast iron and during the cooking. It's similar to like how somebody would do like a brick chicken kind of thing, of you're basically condensing the fibers with the presence of heat. And so you look at any kind of cluster. You can do this with any mushroom, but if you look at, you know, cluster mushrooms such as maitake, which are also called chicken of the woods, and You can do this with, oyster mushrooms, the clustered oyster mushrooms. You could do it with lion's mane mushroom, which are these beautiful puffball-looking mushrooms. And you can do it with, simple portobello as well. But you basically get a very hot cast iron pan, oil it a little bit, and then you put the mushroom down. You put another cast iron pan on top, and you press it with weight, whether you're pushing it down with your fist, obviously a towel, and then your fist, or you can just stack a couple of cast irons on top. Like if I'm doing a large amount of these, I have a flat grill at home, so I'll take a half sheet pan and put a bunch of weight on top of it and just press it that way. If you're doing it in just a cast iron, you can just put a smaller cast iron on top and do that. And what you're doing is you're basically creating that caramelization and you're condensing the fibers. So one of the things that we say is not to season it until the second sort of turn. So you wouldn't season it right when you put it on it, because with salt, you're opening up those pores, releasing the water, which you don't necessarily want to do right out of the gate. So you would season once you flip it. So, and from that, once you have these sort of mushroom steaks, call them, then you can marinate them, brine them, sauce them, and then throw them on a grill, and they're absolutely killer. If you're looking at the book or if you have it in front of you, we have it's called the Maitake brisket, which is towards the end of the book. It's under in the comfort food section, and it's one of the favorite techniques that are in the book, I would say. So that is on page 225, if you have that. So basically, press this maitake and then, you know, coat it with a marinade and a sauce and throw it on the grill, and you get all those little charred bits, and it's just absolutely delicious. So,
yeah, I make a brisket with using seitan, but not with maitake. No, I don't see it. Hold on a minute.
Towards the end.
Maitake 223. Got it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so there's that one, and then also I would say it's in the beginning chapter, the opening starters, and it's corn dumplings. Those are kind of a riff on sort of some bold Thai flavors. So it's basically these corn dumplings that I use a combination of fresh corn, and I use freeze-dried corn also. So I've been using a lot of freeze-dried fruit and freeze-dried vegetables to give you that real punch of flavor. So if I'm doing like a pea dumpling, like a sweet pea dumpling, I'll use fresh sweet peas, steam them, blanch them, blend them, whatever I'm doing. And then I'll also use freeze-dried, and then I'll grind those to a powder, basically. And so all you're adding a dry component to thicken up that wet component, but you're also adding a absolute punch of flavor, too. So in that recipe, I have fresh corn with some aromatics in there. I got some lemongrass and some chili, and you're just blending that up with some fat, and then that's going to be very loose. So then I use freeze-dried corn. I blend that into a powder, and I add that in along with some green onion, and it creates almost like a thick batter, and then that's your dumpling filling. So then you get.
Now, where does someone buy freeze-dried corn?
There's a company called Just Tomatoes, or I forgot that was Karen's Naturals, I think they're called. You can get them at most stores. I mean, most stores have freeze-dried fruit and vegetables, so they're in Karen's Naturals. It's in like a green bag. I know I'm over here in Austin, and all the HEBs and Central Market and Whole Foods, they all sell them. So so it's one of those ingredients that nobody really looks for unless you need it. So
right.
So it's in the freeze-dried section with probably in where the dried fruits are and things like that. So sometimes it's in the baking section. So, but freeze-dried corn, you can also get, if I'm doing any kind of desserts too, I do something similar. If I'm making like any kind of whipped cream or mousse or anything like that, I've been using aquafaba lately, which is chickpea water, which is in the book also. Chickpea water has basically the same sort of molecular structure as an egg white when it comes to protein and starch balance there. So it's basically, it whips just like an egg white, which is crazy. So you can make incredible meringue just out of the liquid from chickpeas. So
Yeah, I remember when that was discovered. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
A whole new ingredient flavor packet.
Because you don't want to mess with the pH too much, so you can't really add, you know, too many extracts or fresh fruit purees to those meringues, but you can add fruit powders. So I'll use like a strawberry powder or a raspberry powder or peach powder or something like that from freeze-dried fruit and just blending them to a powder, you know, and it just, again, punch of flavor, which is really nice without adding sugar, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about your book and also about Good Catch Foods, your plant-based seafood. So everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green and with Chad Sarnow talking about his new book. Be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear Jill Stein and Ralph Nader and the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Chad Sarnow, talking about Wicked Healthy, the company he co-founded with his brother, and also author of a new book. And I'm thrilled to have you with me. Chad, you here?
Thank you. Yep, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Great. Sure. So right before the break, I wanted to ask you about Good Catch Foods, which is the plant-based seafood line that you're, or company that you're starting. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's one of the things that I'm, you know, I had mentioned that, you know, our focus at Wicked Healthy is on innovation and what drives innovation. That's often a question that we get is what really drives culinary innovation? And there's a couple things. I mean, there's obviously the market, what consumers want, where the gaps are. Taste, first and foremost, I think that's important. That includes texture also. Convenience, affordability, and then in, you know, environmental health and impact opportunity is also a driving factor. Impact opportunity is a big one for me. I had mentioned earlier that, you know, I've been an activist my whole life, and so being involved with projects that are going to rattle the system a little bit really excite me. So we started a a company almost 2 years ago now called Good Catch Foods, which if you look at just statistically in general, I mean, fish account for over 95% of the animals slaughtered for food worldwide. 95% of all animals slaughtered around the globe are fish. And then if you look at the plant-based opportunities and the plant-based options, there's a lot of plant-based sort of chicken and plant-based beef and, you know, solutions. But there's nobody that's addressing the seafood from a plant-based perspective. So we had some great activist investors to start off the initial seed funding, New Crop Capital. If you haven't looked at Good Food Institute, they're an incredible organization that really of food scientists and researchers that do a lot of polling and gather incredible information about sort of where the gaps are, where the needs are, and things like that, where the greatest opportunity is. So they're the sort of the philanthropic arm of New Crop Capital, our initial seed investment. And so they approached us and was like, hey, you know, there's this growing need right now to offer something within the seafood space that's plant-based. And fin fish being the first category, fin fish being tuna. If you look at, in general, the collapsing of our oceans in general, a lot of it is due to tuna fishery, you know, on large scale fisheries. I mean, these, you know, 100-mile death nets, we call them, or these, you know, 50-mile-wide purse nets, I mean, they're catching everything in their way to catch tuna. So from the impact opportunity, we jumped at this. And so from a culinary standpoint, it was a huge challenge of creating something that replicated sort of tuna in texture. Yeah, that replicated it texturally tuna. And when people say vegan seafood, those two words together, it kind of turns people off. because I think when people think of seafood, they think of the smell, right? A lot of people don't like seafood because of the smell or, you know, the growing, you know, there's a huge population of allergies as well around seafood. So when we set off on this development, one of the biggest questions that we had was, how are we going to mimic this texture? Because texture of tuna is very different than texture of, say, chicken or beef, right? And going into the plant-based space, there's a couple things that we wanted to work on. One of them was it's called HME, which is high moisture extrusion. And it's a type of processing that, similar to the Beyond Meats of this world and, you know, other companies like that, Gardein, that are using extrusion technology, which is basically using bean concentrates in, you know, whether it's pea or soy or things like that, using concentrates and hydrating it, and through pressure, you're creating this extrusion process, which you're at the end result is texturally like chicken or like beef. But what's amazing is that, you know, a lot of these beans that are out there, they're used for sort of their gelling properties to create sort of that bounciness of as an animal meat would. And so we've come up with this blend of legumes out of six beans. So we use, there's lentil, there's fava, there's navy bean, chickpea, soy, and pea in there. And we've, we've replicated really the texture of tuna, which is incredible. So we have a tuna in water, tuna in oil. These aren't going to be launched till the end of the year. There'll be more information to come on this, but it's goodcatchfoods.com. But we'll be available throughout the U.S. and over in the U.K. By the end of this year. So we're really excited about it.
That's really exciting. Now, this is to replicate tuna fish that's in a can for tuna salad, correct? Not sushi, correct.
And we're not, we're looking at, they'll be in a pouch, and we're looking at sitting right next to, tuna in the can. So I think more and more larger companies are looking at it to be pouched. I think the consumer perspective is that it's a fresher product when it's in a pouch, which is interesting. But so we're not going to be canning. We're going to be having ours in the pouch. And what's interesting also is there is, I won't name the company, but it's one of the large tuna companies that everybody's familiar with, had approached a plant-based company and asked them to, you know, create a tuna that was scentless because their decline in sales was directly related to workplace shaming, is how they put it, which is hilarious because I didn't even know tuna shaming was a thing in the workplace.
Uh-huh.
So because of the scent, it's a very offensive smell for a lot of people. And especially if you're not the one eating it, if someone's opening up a can of tuna in a closed office or in an airplane, I mean, that's just very offensive. Same with eggs.
Yeah, I was
right?
going to mention the airplane. I mean, you know, that smell on an airplane is so intense. And when someone, you know,
oh
it shocks me that they sell tuna sandwiches at airports just for that reason.
Yeah. And so they've actually been able to identify that a lot of the decline in their sales was due to workplace shaming. So they asked this plant-based company if they would be interested in coming up with a scentless option, and which is funny. And this was a couple of years ago. So one thing with our product is that it's not offensive whatsoever when it comes to flavor. We don't use natural flavors. We don't work with flavor houses to get that tuna scent. Or it's a combination of beans, algae, seaweeds, and extracts and oils. That's it, you know. It is a seafood product because we're using algaes and seaweed in the product. So we're going to see how long we can get away with calling it a seafood product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you whether there was any seaweed in it to get a little bit of that. Ocean.
Yeah, so it's almost like a taste. Yeah, so it's almost like a fresh ocean flavor rather than a fishiness. You know, so that's what's nice about it. It's more like a very fresh, because once you get that fishiness from any, I grew up with tons of seafood. So once you get something that's very fishy, it means it's really not fresh. You know, at the end of the day. So, you know, if you're catching a fresh fish or something like that, it's going to have that more ocean flavor. That's what we're going towards. So, yeah, it's exciting though. So that will launch at the end of 2018. We should be available in most retailers. And people can take a look at goodcatchfoods.com for more information.
Mm-hmm. Well, another recipe that you had in your book that really was amazing to me were the scallops. From the mushroom stem. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
You mentioned in the beginning of your show, you mentioned there's an event at the New York Botanical Gardens around biomimicry. And that's the same term that we use in the culinary world for culinary biomimicry when it comes to using single ingredients to mimic a textural and taste experience that people have with animal products. So this is a growing demand within the culinary field, plant-based field. There's a great company out there called Ocean Hunger Foods. They're doing It's called Ocean Hunger Foods, and they're doing a tomato sushi, and it's basically tomato concasse, almost like it's basically peeled tomato flesh that's basically brined, dried a little bit, and then it looks almost identical to tuna. So people can check it out. Ocean Hunger Foods, it's a French company. They're doing incredible work, and they're using single ingredients. And this is really where those scallops come in. I mean, it's biomimicry. You take the appearance of it, it looks like it, but from a textural standpoint, it's amazing. Once king oyster mushrooms are brined, we brine those in a dashi, kind of a vegan dashi stock, which is dashi is typically, you know, bonito flake, which is fish flake, and kombu, but we just use it's a flavorful kombu, which is a seaweed broth. We brine those oyster mushroom stems in that. And then we pan sear them with some soy butter, a combination of vegan butter and tamari, and with a little bit of garlic. And it's just so good. And, you know, you just do a little cross cut on those stems. And once they're brined, they've absorbed a little bit of that sort of sea flavor from the seaweed brine. And pan searing them, you're getting that really nice crust on top, just like you would a scallop.
And it looks so much like a scallop. That's what's just so amazing. And, you know, I talk to groups all the time, you know, when I'm doing cooking demos about the importance of how food looks. You know, kids especially, you know, they decide if they like a food or don't like a food before they even taste it, just by what it looks like. And It's so important for things to look beautiful, look familiar.
Familiar, exactly.
You know, for people to really want to indulge. And these scallops are just amazing looking.
Well, I think we get. I think one of the funny arguments that people have that are against plant-based options is, why do vegans want to mimic the texture and the appearance of meats? Why don't they just eat meat? Right. That's a big argument that we always get. And you know, we're not appealing. I'm not making vegan food for vegans. You know, there's 1% of the population less probably that's vegan, and that's not who my focus is. And with Wicked Healthy, and a lot of the people in the plant-based world, we're making vegan food that is basically, for the masses, vegan food for meat eaters at the end of the day. And it's, you know, having the options that people are familiar with. You nailed it right there. I mean, it's all about familiarity and having something that that appearance-wise, you're familiar with it. And then smell-wise, you're familiar with it. Texturally, you're familiar with it. And then at the end of the day, you're eating something that's
healthier for you and healthier for the planet.
Exactly. That's having a positive impact, you know, and that's what makes me sleep at night. So.
Right, right. Well, I'm with you. That's, you know, I always talk about my food as well is not for the vegans and vegetarians, and especially so often the vegans and the vegetarian food. You know, sometimes I was like, I've been a judge at a vegan turkeyless Thanksgiving type of thing, and it blows me away how bad so much of the food is. You know, and I think to myself.
Yeah.
I think to myself, oh my God, if this is why people don't become vegans, because they think this is what they're going to have to eat.
And exactly. There's only so many minds you can change with handing them a lentil loaf and a green soup. You know what I mean? I mean, there's nothing wrong with those foods.
Or, you know, a lasagna where you take out everything that tastes good and you just sprinkle fake cheese on top. I mean, that's just not going to.
Exactly.
That's not going to transport someone who loves. You know, creamy, delicious lasagna to want to eat that. So it's just, you know, it's amazing to me. So your food is so much right up my alley. I just absolutely love it. One other one I just want you to share with people because I can't wait to find these mushrooms. I never even heard of these mushrooms for your New England lobster roll. What kind of mushrooms are those?
Yeah. Those are actually called lobster mushrooms. You can find them. It's one of those, which is interesting. So they have this amazing deep orange color on the outside, and they have a white flesh. And you can get these from specialty markets. Almost everything can be purchased at most retailers. That's in the book, with the exception of, you know, a couple ingredients. One of them is lobster mushrooms. If you live near any of the coast, like Northwest or Northeast, these grow. You can forage for these. When we were up in Oregon, we went foraging for mushrooms up in outside of Portland, and we found almost 20 pounds in this little grove of mushrooms, and that was in September. But they're this really hardy, sort of thick mushroom, and what you can do is you brine them. You know, a lot of it comes down to brining and poaching. So. We'll poach this in like a miso sort of kombu stock kind of thing. And then again, same thing, just butter it up in a pan. And once it cools, you can serve it with celery, some onions, a little mayo of your choice. And then put it in a little buttered hot dog bun. And can't get a better lobster roll than that without the lobster. So
just looks great. I cannot wait to make that one. Well, Chad, we are out of time. I can't believe it. I could talk another hour easy with you. But thank you for joining us so much. And thank you, everyone, for joining us and listening. And go out and get this book. I'm telling you, it will transform your life. The Wicked Healthy Cookbook. Chad, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Bye, everyone. I'll see you all next week. Have a great rest of the week.
Bye-bye.